Hey ladies, quick show of hands. Have you ever peed yourself during a workout or while you were fast walking to the public ladies room? And were you told that's a normal thing that happens, either because you're exercising or because you've had a kid or two or you're over 30 or whatever? Well, how about we get a second opinion before we decide to accept peeing all over ourselves as a thing? I've got my Pilates instructor, Susie Kidd, here to educate us about our good friend, our pelvic floor, and how to keep it healthy and strong throughout our ever-changing lives. Men, stick around. You have a pelvic floor, too. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and this is Through the Eyes of Women, next on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. Hey, have you seen the ads for those absorbent underpants for women to wear while they're exercising? Not women with health conditions, regular, healthy, gals on the go. Is this a thing? Is everyone peeing themselves? Or are we just doing exercises that weren't designed for us? Are we getting incomplete information about our bodies? What is going on here? I was wondering if I'm the only woman with dry pants, so I asked my Pilates instructor, Susie Kidd. She's a dancer, a performer, an educator, and we spend a lot of class time discussing anatomy and sports medicine. Thanks for coming into the studio, Susie. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you, Emma. I'm glad to be here.
You're the owner of Sacred Bodies Pilates in Eureka, California, and you just celebrated 10 years in business. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What drew you into it?
You know, I originally was exposed to Pilates through my dance training, and I don't even think that I knew that it was Pilates at the time. It wasn't ever stopped and told to me what it was that I was doing, but I found that it felt really great in my body. It was something that we were doing just for basic training to be aware of our body, understand how we moved. And dancers, before we get out there and actually perform or even work on dance steps, we do a lot of body conditioning, and that's how I was first exposed to Pilates. After that, living here in Humboldt County, after I got my degree, which is actually in natural resources planning and interpretation, I realized that field was not going to take me in the direction I needed to go. And I was lucky enough to work with a woman named Natalie Uberman, who taught at a dance studio I was teaching at the time. She's actually one of the Pilates elders. Joseph Pilates trained 4 people before her. So I was lucky enough to be what they called, you know, back in the day, the apprentice teacher, who was asked to come and learn from Natalie. And then I went on and gained my certification, my first one I received in 2003.
So let's start at the beginning, Susie. What is Pilates?
Well, Pilates is actually named after a person named Joseph Pilates. And today we know it as a popular fitness regime, often confused to being a fitness style that's specifically for women. However, it was created by a man for men. The original work was called Contrology. And the idea is that with mind over matter, mind over body, connecting mind, body, and spirit, that we work from our core to understand how the rest of our body moves. So we focus on breathing, we focus on posture, we focus on core strength that allows the rest of our body to move through space with ease and enjoyment.
Was Joe Pilates creating these moves for, was it the military?
He was working in an internment camp, and he was working with military people that were injured from war. And so there's 2 forms of Pilates that we know today. There's the mat classes, which are the most common, that often gets confused with yoga. There are some similarities, and there's also some differences, and that's a whole other conversation. but there's also the equipment work, which is spring resistance, and some of the original equipment was based off of a hospital bed. So imagine that you're an injured soldier, and you have had amputated legs, and you're now bedridden. So you have a couple options. You're going to stay there and get, you know, bed sores and be very uncomfortable, or you're lucky enough that Joe Pilates just happens to be in your area, and he comes along and takes the springs off the bottom of your bed and connects them to the poles around the top of the bed, and then grabs the dowel and says, hey, you can now work your upper body and your arms from a lying down position, because from your pelvis upward, you are strong enough to do so.
What made him decide to do this? Do we know much about him personally? What drove him?
He himself was a sickly child, as we know. He had breathing issues, which is a huge bit of why he really enjoyed working out outside and why a lot of his work focuses on breath, because even today, most of us hold our breath, and that causes so many problems for the rest of our body. He also was a boxer. He was a gymnast. He was in such great physical shape by the time that he was a teenager that he was being asked to model for anatomical diagrams. And he also worked with gymnasts. When he brought his work to the United States in the 1930s, he was quickly discovered by dancers. And that's where it came into the dance world and how it's been somewhat confused with being geared towards women and towards dancers since then, when really he's worked with all athletes. And a lot of his work came from him watching animals and babies in our natural movement patterns before we've been taught to think otherwise.
And your training in Pilates makes you a sort of kind of a descendant of our friend Joe, yes?
Well, considering that my training came from just a few people below Joe, yes. So I'm what you can be considered a classically trained Pilates instructor, and I'm also what you can be considered a contemporary Pilates instructor, because since then I have gone on to do other trainings, which includes more contemporary, meaning we've taken the original work and we've allowed for modifications for those that maybe have injuries or people who want to just have an everyday quality of life versus some of these people that were, say, military injured people or, as you brought it to the United States, high-functioning athletes and dancers and Olympians. So my training has allowed me to kind of focus on all of the above.
I know as your student that you do a lot of continuing education and that this is a field that evolves, and we get into some pretty interesting kind of workshop conversations towards the end of class because this class has been working together as a group for a few years. What are some examples of some of the continuing ed that you've done over the last however many years?
You know what's awesome? Some of you have been in that class for 10 years. I think some of you were in my original studio. So as a teacher, if I can't continue to evolve and the class can't continue to evolve, then we're missing out on something. So as I said, there are some very classical trainers out there. To them, the work is the original work and it never wavers from that. However, we have realized that the basis of this work is really making us think about the body in a slightly different way in the Pilates field. And I have gone on to also train and become certified as a breast cancer post-rehab specialist, which means that I work with women after they've had their surgeries from breast cancer, whether they've had breasts removed or not, or preparing those that are going to be going into surgery because there's not a lot of information for rehab out there. I also have trained twice. I recently came back from a training, I guess it was in April, the original training I did 3 years ago, and I have been seeking out this woman, Carolyn Anthony, and she is the owner of the Center for Women's Fitness. She trains women all over the world, actually. When I got her to come here, she came here from Malaysia, and the only reason I was so lucky is that her daughter happened to be going to HSU at the time. So she has created these really efficient and profound training programs geared towards Pilates instructors to work with women pre and postnatally. We work with pelvic floor health. She has programs that are designed towards working with women through menopause, osteoporosis, and basically all stages of female health, which, as I think most women know, is not something that we are trained from a young age. Most people don't even know what their body parts are called. We consider our bones our thigh bone instead of calling it the femur bone. I don't think I learned about my female anatomy until I went into what, like the fifth grade, and then it was considered sex education. So I consider this part of my body to be only a sexual part versus something that actually dictates the function of the rest of my body as well. And I think that that's something that's really missing, especially for women.
Is it challenging to talk about? Because it's been for a couple of years, you have been saying to your students, and you know, if you ever want to learn a little bit about your pelvic floor, just, you know, let me know. And I think most of us are probably thinking, oh, that sounds interesting. And oh, am I going to be the first one to say that that sounds interesting? Is this hard?
You know, luckily I have a good sense of humor and I'm a little silly and I'm a little outspoken anyway. And when you're in the form of being the one speaking, you either know that you're going to get laughed at, looked at weird, or people are going to respond. And luckily, I've been working with most of you long enough, and I take a lot of cues on body language of how people respond, which is why I offer the information and encourage questions and will back off if it's not comfortable. I find myself when I start talking about the pelvic floor, especially to new students, and I have students now, like I said, some of them have been with me so long, they're going into menopause, and some of them are way beyond that, right? I have students that are still with me that are in their 70s now. So, you know, the joke, you know, you giggle or you're coughing, ha-choo, oops, you know, maybe you're peeing, or you have the problem with incontinence, or hey, maybe your sexual life isn't so great. I remember once being in a bridal shop and I was talking to a bride about getting her in shape for her wedding, and her mom tapped me on the shoulder and said, well, what do you do for those of us that want to stay married? And I said, oh, honey, you need to come see me. Let's talk about your pelvic floor. And she looked at me so confused. Oh, this Kegel thing? Well, no, there's a lot more to it than that. Let's talk. So, yeah, I enjoy a good sex life. Who doesn't?
Well, Susie, the reason I brought you in here, I have been kind of curious about incontinence. I've been doing some research. All the studies that I can find relate to elderly people and elderly people in institutionalized care, but I know it's happening. I've got ads popping up on me for this absorbent underwear, told that certain workouts are just going to make you pee yourself, and that's just a thing. I see friends and relatives not too much older than me kind of doing that awkward fast walk to the ladies' room. Is this our future? Is this just something that's gonna happen as part of the circle of life?
It's very much something that can happen if you're not aware about how to prevent it. Does it need to happen? Absolutely not.
Are we normalizing healthy young women peeing themselves?
In my personal opinion, I do believe so. I do believe in the fitness field, it's become normalized. Now, I haven't seen it quite as normalized maybe in the last year as I had been seeing a couple years ago. Luckily, this conversation is happening more. But when it was being normalized, it was also being kind of shiro-rized, which I think is also a problem. And what I mean by that is, hey, you're not peeing yourself when you're working out. You're not going hard enough. And that's kind of missing the point of what our bodies are designed to do as females.
Well, are we saying that to men? Are we telling men doing intense workouts that if they're not peeing themselves, they're not working hard enough?
I have personally never heard that. And yes, men, you have a pelvic floor too, but your pelvis is designed different than ours. Your muscles are different and you're much stronger in that area. You also don't give birth to babies, which allows for our pelvis to be a transformer once a month throughout our lives when we're menstruating. So no, it's not normal, and it is a problem, and there's many different reasons why.
Are we rearranging our bones and muscles not just when we give birth, but every month when we menstruate?
Every single month when you menstruate, you are having progesterone release into your body, which can allow for the body to be a little bit more, how do I want to say this, flush with fluids. And what that allows to happen is your ligaments to start to stretch. So why do women have low back pain when they are menstruating? Why do we have heating pads? Why do we have pain-relieving medication that we could take? We know the hormone things that happens. There's a lot that's going on with our body, and I think the reason that we feel this way is a lack of understanding. And why do I have to seek out a woman for 8 years in another country to learn about my pelvic floor in a way that I can finally understand it and share it with other people versus finding this information on the internet? I cannot find the information on the internet that I received in this course, even as far as diagrams go.
I know when you got back from meeting with Caroline, you were fired up, and it was a really powerful, terrific experience for you personally. Was there any of that that you wanted to share with our listeners?
When she came here the first time and trained in my studio, it was really profound because I think it was the first time for her that the majority of the people in the room were not Pilates instructors. I actually have brought in physical therapists, massage therapists, and doulas. And the great thing from that is it allowed for a lot of amazing conversation. What I learned about that, not just on the level of how am I training my body as a Pilates instructor, Kegels, but what happens to our bodies as women and the development of having babies and what happens to our bodies and to women during pregnancy and after pregnancy. So my training with pelvic floor is very much geared towards the health of pre and postnatal, as well as just having a healthy body as a female. Now, when I went and trained with her recently, I was in the room with 12 other Pilates instructors. And so this time I got to really think about this, not just from the perspective of my own body, but how to train others. I myself, being a female, have had some complications with some of my health, and it really shed some light on why it was so emotionally draining, upsetting, and physically really challenging to get my body back in health. I'm a Pilates instructor, and being injured, I had a tailbone injury before, which affected my pelvic floor. I've had other female issues. When you are affected in that part of your body and that power is taken away as well, it really affects, I think, the way that you feel about your body and how you understand your body. Being in connection with this part, which is also, if you're, say, a metaphysical person, is where the root chakra is. This is our life force. And coming back from this training and realizing that my body is so strong and so powerful, but the biggest point is that we need to learn how to relax and release as women, not be so strong and bound and tight. We are not men and we're training ourselves that way. I, as a Pilates instructor, realized that I was losing my shape. I was becoming square in my abdominals. the more I started retraining my body from a feminine perspective and from my pelvic floor perspective, I got my waistline back and I'm just as strong.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and we're talking with my Pilates instructor and personal health guru, Susie Kidd, about women's health and the pelvic floor and the fact that many women who might be dealing with incontinence might not have to. Susie, let's give our listeners a little breakdown. Precisely what are we talking about when we talk about the pelvic floor? What is it?
Well, the way that we know it now is we talk about the Kegels. Some people say the Kegels. If you were to look up pelvic floor online, that's probably going to be what you'll find.
And a lot of us know what Kegel exercises are or Kegel exercises are. What are those?
Most people will refer to it as imagining a hammock in the pelvis or in your lower abdominals, as some people say. Not my favorite term, lower abdominals, because it's not very specific. But it's known as being like a hammock. Or you could say, okay, I want you to cut off the flow to urine. Or if you're a female, imagine that you've just inserted a tampon and you don't want it to come out. This is how we normally think about engaging the Kegels, which contracts around the vaginal wall at the base and also lifts up and contracts the sphincter and the urethra.
And is that enough to keep me healthy and strong if I do a couple of dozen of those at a stoplight every now and then?
No. And part of the reason why is because it's giving the idea that our muscles' function is to go up and down, when technically these muscle fibers connect from your pubic bone to your tailbone. And they actually run forward and back. And so the way these muscles move glides forward and back versus up and down in that sense. Now, however, this part of your pelvic floor, because there's different layers, is the strongest layer. And it also is connected to fascia. If you know what fascia is, it's a connective tissue inside of the body, but it allows it to be sort of spongy and bouncy like a hammock, which is why we can feel that sensation of pulling up. But if I'm telling you to do a Kegel, you're probably going to feel it around the anus, and you might even feel it inside the vagina. However, it's not going to be fully contracting your pelvic floor. And part of the pelvic floor health is not only to contract, but to know when to release.
Did you have some moves that you wanted to cue your listeners through to help them find their pelvic floor and feel a little bit more of what we're talking about?
Sure. So as I just mentioned, Kegels are part of it. These are muscles that are connected here, and I'm not going to get into all the anatomical terms because I think it could be a little bit confusing and overwhelming. However, these muscles that we're talking about on the deeper level do connect from the pubic bone to the tailbone. So if I was going to tell someone how to connect these muscles, I could still give you the Kegel. It's not incorrect, but if I was going to ask you to really feel these muscles, I would first ask you to relax, take a moment just to find your own breathing pattern. One thing that we don't do very often in this life is take a moment to relax. So we're going to do that. And then from there, I want you to imagine that your tailbone can glide forward towards your pubic bone. And if you're sitting in a chair, then you want to think of from the back of the chair towards the front of the chair, gliding along the surface of the chair, not so much pulling up and away from the floor just yet. Now, these are really deep muscles. This might not feel like much, and I want this to be a gentle move. You are not forcing anything. If you feel yourself lifting up away from the floor, then just relax a little bit. This is very gentle.
Do you want us actually gliding in our seats right now, Susie?
You could do that, but it might be a little bit uncomfortable for our listeners if anybody enjoys it too much, because these muscles are part of what can create an orgasm in a woman.
Be careful if you're driving.
The other layer of muscles that we have is the more superficial layer of muscles. And these layers of muscles are actually, you could consider them more towards the outside of the body. What was really amazing and beautiful to me learning about this layer of muscles is the shape they make. There's some that connect side to side and some that make diagonal. And the image, if I was to show you on a diagram, is it makes a figure eight. Now, to me, that's really neat because the figure eight in my mind, I think of the infinity symbol up on its, you know, side here. And when a baby is born, it actually pushes through these muscles before coming into the world. So babies that are vaginally born get to come through an infinity symbol, which I thought to be really special. But you have these bones at the bottom of your pelvis. And so if you were to sit on your chair, and if you're like me and you've got a nice big booty, I like to move my butt cheek side to side so I can feel these bones a little better. And if you're on a harder surface, it might be easier to feel. But underneath your bottom, you have these little bony landmarks. These are called your ischial tuberosities. That's kind of a big word. So in class, we refer to them as your sits bones. And these bones have muscles that connect from them side to side. So you could think if you're in your chair, side to side, from cheek to cheek, you have muscles that connect. Now, in addition to doing this, gliding the tailbone towards the pubic bone, if we want to contract this part of the pelvic floor, which is known as the urogenital triangle, we can think of pulling those sits bones inward towards each other. Like you have a rubber band that's cut in half and it's connecting those two places. And so as we exhale, we're going to pull those two places together. And as we inhale, we just relax. And the reason I'm cueing the breathing on this, exhale, sits bones gently pull inward towards each other. And inhale to relax, is because our pelvic floor actually opens and closes with breath. As we inhale, our pelvic floor can open. And as we exhale, the pelvic floor closes. So when we're doing certain exercises, if you're walking, your pelvic floor is being activated. If you can squat down and up, your pelvic floor is being activated. If you open your legs and squat down to the floor on an inhale, you're opening your pelvic floor. And as you exhale, step away, if you slightly contract those sits bones and tailbone and pubic bone, you're now closing your pelvic floor. So the breathing and the movement, if we do it correctly, it can aid in having a healthy pelvic floor just by doing simple movements, sitting here breathing and contracting bony landmarks, or thinking about it in exercise. This goes back to why some women are having problems with pelvic floor health. Say you're a heavy lifter and a deep squatter, backwards breathing or having a weak pelvic floor. Every time you go to a squat or say a high jump and you land, that pelvic floor is going to bounce like a hammock. And if it's weak, it's going to be opening. And that is when you might pee yourself or worse.
And some people do have health issues. For some people, this is a thing that's going to happen. Can they mitigate it with some exercise and care and attention to their pelvic floor and make it a little bit less awful?
Yeah, I mean, the basic exercises that I just gave you is a starting place. You know, there are great exercise programs out there. I think finding an instructor that knows how to cue these things. I mean, even for myself as a Pilates instructor for years, the pelvic floor was not really addressed in my training. And I was told to cue the Kegels for men and for women. What I have found since then, since I have been training my body in a different way, I feel more collected, stronger, and able to perform all of these abdominal exercises that I teach on a regular basis easier because of how they connect with the fascia to the rest of the body. Our pelvic floor is actually connected muscle to muscle to one of the muscles of your hip, right? So if you were to turn what we call laterally, allowing your knee to turn away or your feet to turn away like a duck or a ballet dancer, that is going to actually be affecting your pelvic floor. So there's certain things like squats or pliés that are going to be just actively working your pelvic floor just naturally because that's the function that it actually does. And then for those people who are having issues and aren't aware of what's going on with their body, seeking a trainer that understands because there could be things that their alignment is out. I'm lucky enough to have a network in the community with other practitioners, and one of them is a chiropractor who will often be sending me people who have issues with their pelvic floor due to having problems with their pelvis or problems with their sacrum or their low back. There could be older women with prolapsed uteruses, prolapsed bladders, and all of this can happen throughout our lifetime for various different reasons, but it's almost always going to be tracked back to having a weak pelvic floor.
Susie, what is some of the conventional wisdom that we've been telling pregnant women about their fitness?
We've been telling women that they need to get very, very strong, that they need to be strong to get ready for birth, that they need to do all these breathing exercises, and that it's healthy to lie on your back when delivering a baby.
And have good, strong abs,
and
right?
Have great, strong abs and really strong pelvic floors. One of the problems with having really strong abs and overly tight pelvic floors is that our body needs to release for a baby to come out. The pelvic floor needs to be able to open. So in my pre- and postnatal training that I do with my clients, it's all about learning how to gently contract and release the body. And that women's bodies are going to be changing throughout their pregnancy. Again, the transformer that happens, the pelvis tilts into a completely different direction. The hips open, the legs open, the ribs change. And we need to train women throughout these changes in their body to allow them to stay strong but supple. That's what our bodies do. Having abdominal muscles, especially the rectus, these are the six-pack abs that we all love to have, which are superficial muscles that connects from your sternum all the way down to your pubic bone. If these muscles are too strong in a woman, she has the chance of these muscles splitting apart, separating what we call this a diastasis recti, which means that these muscles will move apart and not function correctly. This can happen to men too. It's very common in very large bodybuilders. If you see those little, it's easier to see in them too, actually, you'll see that little dip in between the muscles on their way off to the sides. That's not normal. The other problem with having a too tight pelvic floor is that when the baby is born, the baby might not actually be able to be pulled out. And when I say pulled out, these muscles actually pull the baby out of you. It's not so much that you're pushing it out. These contractions, these muscles are meant to deliver the baby, to pull the baby down. If your pelvic floor is too tight, if your bones are too close together, if you haven't allowed for the separation, the baby's not going to have room, which leads to cesarean sections, which is a major abdominal surgery that we think of as just being normal. Other complications that can happen is often women deliver babies on their back versus on all fours. Our pelvis, after being pregnant, has completely tilted the other direction. Think about your butt sticking way out. It'd be more appropriate to be squatting or on all fours because that's the direction the baby needs to come out. So we're having things like pelvic floor issues and separated muscles.
What does a healthy pelvic floor do for menstruation?
A healthy pelvic floor for menstruation, I have found for myself, is going to make the whole process just a little bit easier. And what I mean by that is learning how to relax during this time, learning that it's okay for your body to release.
What does a healthy pelvic floor do for sex?
Well,
big smile there.
I'm getting older and older, and the sex is getting better and better.
Because you're healthy and you know your body and you've educated yourself?
I understand how my body works. And really, you know, it's really about communication between you and your partner or you and yourself if you are having self-sex.
If we can't afford a trainer, Susie, what are some things that we can be doing, you know, on our own at home to, you know, promote our health and stave off as much of these complications as we can?
Well, one thing that Emma and I are going to do after this is we're going to take a little video of some basic pelvic floor exercises, so feel free to take a look at that. If you can't afford a trainer, then you can find some of this stuff online, but basically where we started, learning about how your pelvic floor works, understanding these bony landmarks, and starting from a very gentle place.
And we will have more information on our blog at khsuwomen.com. You can learn about Susie's upcoming talks at Sacred Bodies Pilates about the health of the pelvic floor. Thank you ever so much for promoting our happiness and maybe saving us from a little embarrassment or discomfort, Susie Kidd. It has been a great pleasure to have you on Through the Eyes of Women.
It's been great, Emma.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Bracon, and we've been speaking with my Pilates instructor, Susie Kidd, about your pelvic floor. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer, Jesse Eden, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.